So, Boker Tov, everybody. Welcome. On behalf of Torah Moshe, the pleasure to see everybody as we start our fourth Yom Iyun of the year, actually, of 2023. And Judaism encounters the world, and where it's a pleasure, really, I'm really meeting for the first time, Rabbi Dr. Yaakov Nagin, who's been living in Israel for many years. He is the director of the Or Torah Stone Biblical Institute for Interfaith Dialogue and the Baking Drush for Judaism and Humanity. He's also a Rebbe at Yeshivat Otniel, has a PhD in philosophy from Hebrew University, and I very much enjoyed his book, The Soul of the Mishnah, which was, this is, I think, a translated version, and it's Rabbi Dr. Nagin works very much in the interfaith work, and he's going to talk on Judaism and Islam. Vakasha, we're looking forward.
Okay. Thank you, Rabbi Kelman. For many years, I begin every talk by noting today's date, because there's something remarkable about today's date. It never was, and it will never be again. And just contemplating that can make us remember today will never return, and at least, and can help us make the most of it. I then add a verse, a pasuk, to try to guide my thoughts for today. They're usually more positive, but during the war, it's been other types of verses. Hayom Yud Gimel Tevet Tav Shin Pei Dalet Ze Hayom Asa Adonai Nagila V'Nismacha Bo Lishuatcha Keviti Adonai. One of the great insights about the conflicts of the Middle East, if religion is part of the problem, religion, therefore, must be part of the solutions in our conflicts. Now, the first part is undeniable. In the genocidal anti-Semitic atrocities of the Hamas are done in the name of religion. They even called their attack the Al-Aqsa flood. So religion being part of the problem, I think there's a consensus about that. To that second step, therefore religion should be part of any solution, that might be more controversial. Well, I can't resist. Hello, Ben. Thank you for hosting me last week at your home. The second, John Lennon, for example, thought the way to get world peace is by, in his imagine, it's imagine no nations and no religion too. Religion is making so much problems, so let's just get rid of it. But the problem is, first of all, religion and identity are so fundamental, you can't just imagine them to go away. They're a reality. You have to deal with them. And number two, those global movements, such as communism, that try to deny religion and national identity, haven't exactly been shining examples of universal sisterhood, brotherhood, and peace. That being the case, furthermore, I would like to even argue, religion can not only be a source of problems, but also can actually bring something positive to interpersonal relations. So that'll be our topic for today. And let me begin with the anecdote that 20 years after the talks at Madrid, between Shamir and some of the Palestinians, the King of Spain had a event commemorating 20 years to the Madrid discussions. And when he brought together the Israelis and Palestinians who were at those first talks and told them, I've prepared something very special for you, our national delicacy, which happened to be made out of pork. And one of the participants said, at first I was so moved how those Israelis and Palestinians got over their primeval religious identities and all sat down together and ate the pork. But some point later, he said, this probably is telling us that there were some groups that weren't there, weren't part of these discussions, a moment of enlightenment that you can't ignore the fact that the people living in the Middle East have deep religious identities. So you can't ignore that. And since I've said a few words about the negative aspect, to feel that we're not totally divorced from any reality, saying that religion could have a positive role within the Middle East, let us remind ourselves that only a few years ago, something which would also have seen beyond belief began the Abraham Accords, in which a number of Arab nations began relations with Israel. And one positive aspect within the current war, the Abraham Accords have stayed strong. In fact, somebody I'm actually personally close with, Rashid, who is the Minister for Foreign Affairs and Defense in the United Emirates, he was asked during the war, what does the current war tell us about the future of the Abraham Accords? And he said, the Jewish people, their roots are not in Paris and not in New York. I apologize to anybody now in Paris and New York. The roots of the Jewish people are here in the Middle East. This is their past. This is their future. The Abraham Accords are here to stay. And therefore, I think it's no accident that the Abraham Accords have been much warmer and successful than other of the accords between Israel and its neighbors, because they are named after something that relates to our shared deep religious and ethnic identity. So let me talk up, but first I think we have to acknowledge, why is it that religion can be a source of such evil as we are seeing happening right now? And how can there be a transformative approach to use part of it for the positive? And let me note, in no way will I try to underestimate the evil in the world, and just to try to claim, and again, from personal experience, since October 7th, I've been very active on behalf of Israel's foreign ministry, on behalf of different agencies in Israel that I will not mention in a recorded session, in issues that part of this global struggle and war are issues that do relate to things, not only the military aspect, to know that there are forces against us, but there are many forces that stand with us. Maybe before progressing, I'll even share with you something sad but sweet at a recent delegation that I was privileged on behalf of to receive at the foreign ministry, together with Rachel Goldberg, the mother of Hirsch, one of the captives of the Hamas. These were a large group of Christian leaders from Africa. So, of course, I began by saying how moving it is that you're from Africa, because in the Torah, the Jewish people went from the children of Israel to Am Yisrael in Africa. And Moshe, of course, gets his name, is named by an African woman. So I continued that by, of course, pointing out that the woman, the African woman who gave the name to Moshe, was Batya, daughter of God. And many of you are from Kenya, which of course is Hebrew, right? You probably don't know that Kenya is Hebrew. Kenya, yes, God. So as I told them, the fact that even those who came from Tanzania and Rwanda and Nigeria, you're all saying Kenya, yes, God, for being with the Jewish people in these times. And then they shared something very moving. They said that we wondered to ourselves, why is there so much anti-Semitism in the world? Whether the Nazis, the communists, radical Islam, woke culture, where is this coming from? And they said something very moving. They said, the Jewish people, you are the people of God, that God revealed the Torah. people that their cultures have hate, anger and hatred of God, they express that with attacking the children of God, the people of God, the Jewish people. So in many, and I'll talk later about Muslim communities around the world. In just the last month, I've been around the world from Indonesia in the east, and a place which might be even more intimidating these days, at Princeton University at the west. Then that took some bravery, but to know that, yes, we have enemies throughout the world, but we also have allies. Often I say that the relation of the world to the Jewish people, if I choose one word, it wouldn't be hatred. It would be obsession. There's an obsession about the Jewish people. Obsession can turn to hatred. Obsession can also be love. And realizing that reality is not closed. It's open, it's dynamic, and there are forces going both way. And our obligation is to push things in a more positive direction without denying the evil that there is in the world. But let me get back to why is it that religion could be a source of violence, and how, in what ways can that be transformed? A friend of mine, when asked the question about violence in the name of religion, this is Imam Talib Sharif, the Imam of America's oldest mosque, the Muhammad Mosque in Washington, that right before the war, he came with a group, large group of black imams, and we had a long study sessions with different of the rabbis in my interfaith institutions. He said that religion is power. Power corrupts. Religion being ultimate for reflecting ultimate truth, reflecting meaning, reflecting something greater than the reality we're living in, that is power. And power could corrupt, and ultimate power could ultimately corrupt. So it has that potential. Religion is also identity. And then the question is, will my identity set us against one another, or can our identity bring us together as sharing in a great story that we have a part of? Religion, identity setting us against each other will be beliefs that God has, I pray, I serve, I love the true God, but the other is rejected by God, hated by God, and therefore, if God rejects and hates that other, those Jews, then certainly I'm fulfilling the will of God in doing the logical consequence of that rejection and hatred by God. So part of the challenge is, can we change the story? As I mentioned earlier, as the Abraham Accords has done in many ways. I see from Yosef Robinson wrote to us, greetings from the Moroccan Jewish community. And as I mentioned, I've been a number of times to Morocco. In fact, I was the king of Morocco, a little more than a year ago, hosted what was called the N7. N7 is the seven nations, which is Israel and the six Arab nations that have peace with Israel: Jordan, Egypt, the Emirates, Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan, or six Middle East. And truly, he's been there's been a lot of warmth relating to this issue of identity. As the king of Morocco, His Majesty Mohammed VI has said that the vision for Abrahamic religions is not only for us to tolerate each other, but to be a source of blessings from one another. And he's really been, the tradition of many of the kings of Morocco have been both very supportive of the Jewish minority and also seeking their help. When there's traditions in Morocco, when there's drought, to ask for prayers from the Moroccan community. And in fact, about a few years ago, a friend of mine, Rav Danino, when there was problems between the Berber tribes and the Arabs government in Morocco, asked, there's a tradition for the Danino family, which are descendants of the Rambam, to help mediate conflicts between the Berber tribes and the non-Berber, the Arab tribes in Morocco. Of course, there's negative sides also. But as I say, the negative is obvious. The hatred is under our noses. The question is there another aspect to reality? And what can we do to help move reality into a more positive direction? What's transformational, I believe, is relating to identity. Again, what is the story? Is it the other hated and rejected by God? Or is a broad identity that we share in? The same God that I love, I serve, I pray to, this is the God that you love, serve, pray to. This can be transformational and bring us together. But, and here's the big but, even though it's easy to bring sources to base all of these ideas, it can't only be in the head. It has to also be in the heart. To move from the head to the heart, I believe the real life encounters between people that express their deep religiosity and identity, that encounter I have seen throughout the world, what an impact it could make. There's three wise words. I was once at a conference in Amman, Jordan, dealing with the problems of the violence in the Middle East, which it's only a very small part is the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. In three words, they try to capture the path. Connection before correction. Connection before correction. The deep disconnection between people breeds the fear, the hatred, and the violence. And person-to-person connection, it doesn't always work, but could help us bring us to better places. But the last thing I'll talk about is before going to the particular topic, a specific is values. There's an incredibly important statement that Rav Jonathan Sacks would always repeat. Too often, extremists who do acts of violence in the name of religion are called by the press fundamentalists. There's a hidden assumption here that the fundamentals of religion are dangerous. And if we accept that, we are conceding that those egoistic, angry people are fulfilling the fundamentals of religion. The contrary must always be stressed. The fundamentals of religion, of global religion, are about a divine God who is with mercy and love, of a shared and sacred humanity. These are the fundamentals. It is those who use violence, those are the people who are violating the fundamentals. We cannot concede to them that they are right. Or as the book, which I highly recommend, of Rabbi Sacks, Not in God's Name, as a response to violence in the name of religion. I see their comments here about, as I say, person-to-person connections. It's not a solve all. I feel reality. Realities of there's evil in the world. The question is not that we're going to solve all the problems by person-to-person connection, theological discussions. It's in our very violent reality. Can we move things in a more positive direction? Okay, I'm seeing a lot of I've been actually to almost all the countries. I see coming to come from Egypt. Egypt in particular is very anti-Semitic. That could be a topic in itself. Part of important in reality is every group is different. Egypt and Jordan are different. Morocco, the Emirates, Saudi Arabia, there's a complex, multifaceted reality. And to know how to bring it ahead, we have to identify what yes, what not. I'll try to respond to the comments if we have time closer to the end. But let me try to give one historical process which does give grounds of hope for the future. That is in the pathology and positive movement. And again, not black to white, but positive movement in Jewish Christian relations. The vicious anti-Semitism in the name of Christianity that was a reality for almost 2000 years, seeing the Jews collectively responsible as Christ killers, the suffering of the Jewish people and lack of a homeland as a proof, a theological proof for Christianity, these were roots that ultimately led to the Holocaust. But there's been a profound process in the last 60 years, which is not yet complete in Christian-Jewish relations, that the reality, the text of the Sunday prayers were changed in the process beginning in the early 60s, called Nostra Aetate, in our times, when the Pope was deeply shook by a Holocaust survivor who wrote a book demonstrating how, although the Nazis did not work in the name of Christianity, the pathology of hatred had deep Christian roots. And even there, Nostra Aetate in the 60s was a step in the right direction, but not an end. In the original terminology of Nostra Aetate, it expressed a hope of one day the synagogue and the church being united, which hinted at a hope for Jews losing our identity. And Rav Avraham Yishuv Heschel was so taken aback by that, he traveled to Rome. He was given an audience, coincidentally on, or maybe symbolically, on the night of Yom Kippur. He walked over from the great synagogue of Rome to the Vatican and told the Pope, if I have to choose between conversion or dying in the gas chambers, I will die a Jew. The Pope was so shaken, he crossed that part out, and Nostra Aetate began. In that first step, it was mostly what I would call Sor Mira. Sor Mira is it rejecting the negative aspects of collective responsibility of Christ killers. You'll be happy to know that you're no longer collectively responsible. Speaking out against anti-Semitism, but a long way to where things should be. John Paul II, who had the Vatican recognizing the state of Israel, which is tremendously significant theologically, because originally it was denial of the Jewish people and their statehood, which was part of the Christian identity of the myth of the wandering Jew. And in 2015, a document, The Gift of God, Are Irrevocable, which is not well enough known, is that the Jewish people receive redemption through the Torah without any connection to the relation to Jesus. And therefore, the mission to the Jewish people is ended. And there's still a way to go, but profound processes are underway. And I feel that if we don't really, just like the gula of the Jewish people is a process. And if you look at the challenges And if you look at the challenges and the problems and therefore give up at the beginning, there would, the Shivats, the return to Zion, the building of the Jewish state against incredible odds, if we gave up in the middle because of the opposition, we wouldn't be here today. Indeed, Rav Soloveitchik in the early 60s was opposed to theological discussions. I could say a few words about that. Part of it, I feel, is relating to his brisker approach about theology and halacha as being engraved in rock, unchanging, and many of the arguments about you can't talk about God to another religion because every religion has a unique, unchangeable conception would lead to two Jews should not talk to each other about God because every person also has a different conception. The difference between a Breslover Chassid and a Litvak and a Leibowitz Litvak are no less different, are quite profound. In fact, I was once at a seminar called The Jewish Idea of God given by Micha Goodman. And at the break, this lovely Catholic woman from the University of Warsaw comes over to me after listening to Micha Goodman talk about the Jewish conception of God and said, "Oh, I thought Jews and Catholics were more similar." I said, "What do you mean?" "Well, I thought Jews also believe that there's a God that we could pray to that listens to our prayers." I said, "You know, there are some Jews that also believe that there's a God that could be prayed to and listen to our prayers." Another point, which I heard from a number of people, including from one of Rav Soloveitchik's grandsons, I won't mention his name because I don't know if he wants to be public, but a number said that the American rabbis in the 50s, there were such amaratzim in anything dealing with theology. They maybe knew some Hilchot Shechita, but they didn't know any, but theology, Jewish thought was not part of the curriculum for the Hilchot Shechita, Hilchot Basar V'Chalav, for the American rabbis in the 50s, Rav Soloveitchik was concerned that they'd be made mincemeat out of representatives of other religions. So I thought this was, I heard it directly from one of a major grandson of Rav Soloveitchik and from a number of other sources as well, so there might be something to that. But I think also Rav Soloveitchik was saying that before, not only before Nostra Aetate, and certainly before the profound process through which Nostra Aetate underwent. Okay, but now let's get back to part of the the challenge relating to issues with the Muslim world. And again, part of the problem, I'll tell you, I feel I get shivers from a conversation. Most of you probably have heard Simcha Rotman is the person considered to be far right wing, the person behind the Mapecha Mishpatit. He comes I live in Otniel, Har Chevron. And if people think I underestimate terror, I personally am responsible for all the memorials in Otniel, which has been one of the hardest hit places through terror, both the Second Intifada and the current war in Gaza, where both the son of one Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Benny, Elchanan Kalmanzin, was killed, as well as the son of the Menahel, Mickey Mark, was killed by terrorists. His son, Pedaya Mark, was also killed. So, in many of the chats, I actually happen to live in Har Chevron and deal with this a lot. Part of my conversation a week before the terror attack, Shabbat Sukkot, I went over to Simcha Rotman. I went over to the sukkah and I said, "Simcha, we are in a very dangerous situation." I'm saying that, this is Shabbat, the first day of Sukkot. The Hamas wants to create a religious war against us. They're using Al-Aqsa as a pretext. They are trying to get support by creating a narrative that there's a deep built-in war between Islam and the Jewish people. Some of you, of the advisors of, I won't mention get to details, I put by name, have are helping the Hamas in creating this narrative, and this is self-defeating. We have to strengthen the vector of the Abraham Accords against what the Hamas is trying to do. And religious Zionism should have a leading role in strengthening that vector against. And there I mentioned to him a 40-page document, halachic document issued from Iraq, 40 pages explaining why Hamas is, and this from March, it's not after the war, before the war, from March, why Hamas is ISIS, bringing down numerous examples why the demonic pathology of ISIS is what the Hamas is, and therefore forbidding any interaction with the Hamas. It's a 40-page document, was spoken about throughout the world. I said, Simcha, we have to realize, focus our energies at the enemies, and we have to work against their, I gave a lot of examples. The next time I saw Simcha was in the Yeshiva Notniel at the funeral for Elchanan Kalman Zinn, and Chavar Knesset Simcha Rodney came over and said, please send me all the documents that you mentioned, which I did. So there's a dynamic reality. We can see to the enemy, the satanic evil enemy, by saying everybody hates us, everyone's against us, why be naive? The evil is real, but there are other dimensions to reality. And in this dynamic reality, we cannot concede on the beginning if we want to defeat them. So one group that I'm very close with is, in fact, the world's largest Muslim group is the Natlatu Olama. They have 100 million followers from Indonesia. I've been 4 times with their leader. The first time he came to Israel specially to be part of a Kululam, which is a event that they get 1,000 people to sing together, a interfaith Kululam. And their group, it's called Humanistic Islam. They are building networking throughout the Islamic world to try to counter ISIS and other forms of jihadist political Islam. Recently, I was in Princeton, not because of the university, but because this month was 75 years to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And their feeling, and of many of us, is that document has become a travesty used to hijacking human rights in a selective way. They in Princeton, they got together global religious leaders. I was in a room with people that personally are the recognized leaders of more than 1 billion people to create a new document that would be a religious-based universal declaration of human rights that will first speak out the responsibility of evil done in the name of religion, and taking responsibility and calling to reread those sources that have led to violence. And in the dialogue there, and this is a global process that is taking place, and there are many partners. Not everything I can mention being on tape, but we work with Misrad Achutz, the Moetzal Bitachon Lumi, and in many ways to realize that part of our struggle is hoping to create a process similar to that of Nostra Aetate, of the Catholic Church, which hasn't been completed, but has been a lot of steps in the right direction, and taking issues such as the vector of the Abraham Accords, the positive forces, and creating a basis for a future that the identity of Avraham Avinu, the belief in Hashem Echad, will be a positive force. It's a long road, but we have to take steps in the right direction. This is I can mention, I see, it's true. People are suggesting to talk about, I really don't need more reminders in the chats about how many how many enemies we have. But again, let me talk end with one positive event. Because I see I have my last minute warnings. A person I've grown very close to recently, Yusuf Ziadin, which you might not have heard of him. He lives in Rahat. Rahat is Israel's largest Muslim city. I'm very close with the Imam of Rahat. And on Friday, Yusuf brought with his minibus people to the party at the Nova party. And he said, I'll pick you up on Shabbat. He heard about when the massacre began, he realized he had to get there fast. He took his minibus and under very heavy fire, people tried to stop him. He said, he went in, he contacted the people that he was in touch with. He managed to squeeze 30 people into his minibus. And since he's a Bedouin and knows all the side roads, he drove them out. He drove them out of the through these side roads, managed to save not only the 30 people there, but led a convoy of cars after him. He saved dozens of lives. And as I told him when I met him, there's a phrase, Sadiq Yisod Olam. And the Mishnah says, if you save a life, it's like you saved the world. They said, you truly are Yusuf HaTzadik. And I was with him again in the city of Rahat, the Imamim of the South, together with a group of Rabbanim. We spent a day volunteering together in the municipality of Rahat with Israeli flags everywhere. We packed half a day. We packed food packages for all the refugees of the area from Otef Aza. Then we did a joint study, and then we were mitpalel together. So yes, the evil is real. It's there. It's demonic. But there are other forces, and we must know to get our victory in a global world, we must know how can we bring reality in a better place in a long process, and maybe end with the words, Am ha-netzach lo mefached miderech arukah. The eternal people do not fear a long journey. Okay, so I suspect my time's up. Bezat Hashem, we should have besorot tovot.
We have a minute or two for questions. If anyone would like to ask, but if anyone would like to ask a quick question,
okay.
I think you addressed David's point in the chat about Rav Soloveitchik's view are not as relevant or may have changed or other people disagree, etc. Anybody have any questions, comments? If not, I'll just very quickly ask you do you see, with all the positive and negative, do you see something positive coming out of this, especially the terrible war? Just like, the peace accords with Egypt came out of the 73 war. Might this lead to some Palestinians and some Muslim leaders promoting peace and some on the Israeli side? If you want to comment on that.
I think there's a consensus that there was a lot of fear at the beginning that just like in Shomrei HaChomot, the riots that were 2 years ago by Israeli Arab citizens would riot, that has not materialized at all. And some of their leaders, one point that I make, have been outspoken in critiquing the terrorism. One point they make, there are four Arab parties in Israel. The one that most has been condemning terror attacks, talking about coexistence, talking about Israel continuing to be a Jewish state, is the leader of the only one religious of the four parties, which I think is an expression of religion could go both ways.
I would like to say something.
Very quickly, please. Very quickly, 10 seconds.
Rabbi Alexander Altman said that Judaism is not a philosophy, but a religious experience. I think we should emphasize this great understanding to try and connect experiences of different religions.
Thank you for that comment. And that's why I feel sometimes join prayer with other monotheists, which is halachically something, I think, positive. For those who believe in Beit Tfilah L'Kol Amim, I feel somehow that comes from the soul, not just from the mouth, and could be more transformational. So that's a good way to end. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Nagin. Really a pleasure. I know you're going to give a shir now in Yeshivat Otniel, which is why you requested to be first. So really cover so many worlds. Much hatzlach in the work. And let's hope that we do move in the right direction. We look forward to learning with you in the future. Okay, thank you. Thank you. And we'll take a 54-second break. And Dr. Shapiro, where are you, Mark? I know you're here. We'll begin. And okay, everybody can stretch and do a jumping jack or two if they want to stretch their legs. Okay, thanks. You're Mark, right? Yes, I'll just make you co-host. People are allowed to talk during this 50 seconds, you know, you don't have to be quiet.
Yaakov Nagin.
Yes. Nagin. Yes, Mel.
It's Yaakov Nagin, not Nagin.
Oh, okay. Okay. I apologize. Thank you. Okay.
He's Menachem Ganach's nephew.
I know. We were talking about that earlier. We had a very nice conversation before we started, but it is the first time I'm actually meeting him. Okay. But thank you. Right. He's sort of a Nagain.